Welcome to Science Importance, a War Machine and Horse podcast based out of Buffalo, New York. Today we're here with myself, Bill.
Paul.
Patrick.
Adam.
Patrice. Let's get the real name down.
Oh.
It's going to follow you everywhere.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. All right, guys. Today we are going to answer a bunch of listeners' questions. So we are a little behind because Pablo and I were a little sick. Decided that you didn't want to hear a couple hours of us coughing at you. So we're finally recording. And it looks like that Patrick is going to now, instead of just being a guest, be more of a staple on the podcast. It might not always be the four of us so that we keep a regular recording. But we're hoping to have us four as often as we can.
Did you want to talk about upcoming events?
Sure. Why not? Let's talk about upcoming events. So this upcoming Saturday, we have a War Machine Weekend qualifier at Millennium Games, run by the fabulous Gail Martindale, on June 9th. And that's a 75-point steamroller, and she has deemed it with zero D&C. Woohoo!
Also Mac Davis food.
Yes, it'll have food made by Eric MacDavis. I don't know what his menu was this time. Maybe he didn't post it yet.
I don't think I saw it either.
No. Sometimes he posts it ahead of time, or he lets us know at other tournaments.
Yeah, right.
But I'm sure it'll be great. It's always nice to not have to leave and just have food there. It also makes the tournament a heck of a lot faster. For people who are looking at possibly going to that, spots are filling up. They're almost filled. On top of that, also, it is technically a two-day tournament. It's four rounds the first day, two rounds the next. You can play in the rounds the following day, but it's really for the four people who are left over as undefeateds. So you can, come out, play with us. We'll be there. Adam's helping run it. Paul and I and Pat will be playing in it. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And she's taking pre-registration, so you can submit your list ahead of time on Conflict Chamber.
Yes. And then after that, on July 14th, we have Adam running another tournament at Collector's Inn here in Buffalo. That one is a World Ender Points tournament. I unfortunately won't be able to go, but that's also a 75-point steamroller. And is that D&C?
Yeah, it's D&C 0.
Yep. And at that point, actually, we will have a new steamroller packet, right? Because wouldn't Lock and Load already fire by then?
Yes, we will.
Beautiful.
So it should be pretty exciting.
Okay, so...
That's cool.
Gonna have to work that into my program.
Yeah, it's not changing too much if they keep to what they had in CID, so it should be good.
Yeah, it should be relatively the same.
Yeah. So, is that all of our events coming up, guys?
It's everything, I think. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we do, on the weekend of July 22nd, have TGX in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
I know that I'm trying to go to that. I have a free ticket now. I don't know. Are you guys looking to go?
I've heard there's a team event, so if that's like a one-day team event, I might be tempted to go up to play in the team event or something. Yep. I don't know if I'd go the whole weekend.
Team event is a qualifier for the World Ender Final.
Sure. So... team event could be fun.
We should talk about that. Not now, though. All right, yeah, that sounds good. Pat, are you looking to go?
Depending on my availability, I might go to it.
Okay.
I know that Saturday I have a wedding to be at.
Ooh. Yeah, that can be tough.
That's rough.
I know some other guys are from our groups going, too. So, yeah, so we'll work it out. And then I think, Adam, you said you weren't going?
Unless I can get off work.
Gotcha. Well, that's just for the Friday. You could always come up for the Saturday stuff or whatnot. So, all right. Well, that sounds good. You guys ready for the questions?
Sure am.
All right. Well, some of the questions were answered, but we'll give our takes on them. Some other listeners answered other listeners' questions, and that's great. I was surprised how many people really gave lists or gave questions. During our time off, I guess the first one though is an interesting one. We have various people with various takes, from this podcast alone. The first one is wives, just wives, period. How they wreak havoc on our game time, and how to avoid the honey-do list. Oh, boy. Well, there's two of us that are married and two of us that are single here, and I have the added benefit of having a small child running around that basically calls these guys uncles, for that matter. Yeah, so where do we want to start with this one? Do we even want to go down this rabbit hole, I guess is the...
I'll go down because it's not really going to affect me.
He'll throw us
except
under the
my
bus.
Wife's upstairs.
He'll throw us under the bus.
I'll talk very quietly into the mic.
Okay, let's see what you have to say then.
Yeah, I don't have this problem, so...
Just rub it in, then. Yeah.
That's your answer. Yeah,
that's my answer.
I don't have this problem, so...
All right.
Except on days where you lock
one side. Well, I'll go ahead, I guess. For me, I guess when we had my son Hunter, we talked about it. I used to do a lot of other things too besides just play War Machine, and I don't do those things anymore. But one thing that I did really push for is to make sure that I still had one day to do my gaming, and usually for the most part, I either get one day of gaming a week where I get to do a game or two, or I get maybe a second day of a game or us together as a podcast, one of the two.
Yeah, I get I don't have kids, but I figured out a little bit ago that writing everything down on a calendar that we have in our kitchen, like it's a wipe off, like dry erase calendar, and if I know I have events coming up, if I write them down so they're clear, so she knows when everything is, that has helped, because then it's not creeping up on either person, rather than just like, oh, surprise, like I'm going away for the day on Saturday. But also, I mean...
Screw it, I'm out!
Yeah, Thursdays are usual night to play games, and if I have an event on Saturday, sometimes I won't go on Thursday, for example, just to, stay home and...
I think that's less for events. You still usually go on Thursdays. It's if we go to a convention.
Yeah, especially if we're going to be gone for the whole weekend, for sure. Yeah, I know. I mean, like, the Sioux was on, Friday through Sunday. I didn't... Like, none of us played games on Thursday. Like, we all stayed home. And
well, Adam would have.
Yeah. Right. But like, me and you were like, we're not going out. Like, instead, like, my wife and I, like, went out for dinner and stuff. And,
Well, in our case, too, every so often, like, our wives will do something together if we're at a tournament or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and there's also, like, when we go to the local ones, like, ones that are in Buffalo, sometimes, we'll finish up and everybody goes out for dinner, including, Jenna and, my wife and stuff. Like, we'll all go out and get food or something after. Yeah. So that works. I have found that the calendar thing works pretty well, like, letting my wife know well in advance.
Yeah, I do that
about
too.
Stuff is a good idea. I don't like if I found out about an event 1 or 2 days before, I don't think I would even try to go, just because I don't know if that's like fair. So
and you kind of have a kid. You have a fur kid.
I do have a dog, but all you have to do with dogs is like feed them and take them for a walk. They'll keep themselves alive. Other than that, so.
What are you trying to say about Hunter Paul?
No, I'm just saying.
He's a little daredevil? Yes, he is.
he's whacked his head on the table a couple times down here and things, so.
Maybe.
So, Pat, Any? What's your take on this?
No comment.
No comment. Okay. All right, so there we have that. So good luck, I guess, is the other thing that we can say about it.
I did like the guy who's trying to get his wife to play.
That's true. So if we read down in the comments section here, there is a guy that was trying to get his wife to play. And I guess that could be a resolve. I've never been that lucky. Like,
yeah,
I'm lucky enough that she plays board games every so often.
Yeah, that's another thing that we've done too, is like go and play like in the local events and then like come back and play a board game.
Or yeah, we did do that after...
that kind of thing.
Yeah, we would go Adam's play... Adam's event the other day.
Yeah, both of our wives like playing Settlers of Catan. And that's... That's a good...
It's not my favorite board game, but it's not my least favorite. And if it that it makes them happy.
It's one that that people are... Even people who don't play tons of board games can easily wrap their head around pretty quick and tend to enjoy. So,
every so often, Jenna will even ask to play those, so it's not even just us asking.
Yeah, Colleen loves to play board games. Like we go to my parents' house and stuff and play board games.
But yeah, if you can, I guess the easiest way to say this is if you can get your wife or girlfriend to play War Machine, just fucking marry her.
I guess so. Yeah.
The best of luck to you.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds good. All right, next question, guys. Or does Pat want to give his take? Or is he still going to be silent on this subject?
Well, wife really isn't my thing.
Well, that's all I'm thinking. Sure. Let's change this to significant other.
Sure.
Oh, Didn't think you were going to ask me that. Put me on the spot.
Sure. I guess it was kind of implied.
Yeah, sure.
As significant other, not just wife.
It's been a while.
Because obviously, boyfriend or girlfriends count as well.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, basically any time. I mean...
We happen to have wives.
Yeah, I mean, I've only been married for 2 years, but I've been playing this game for 5, so it's similar. Similar situation. I would make sure... Even like when we were dating, like that, I told Colleen like well ahead of time that, we've got this or that coming up in a couple weeks, like, so I'll be gone for the day or.
Well, I've also noticed sometimes like, you'll even try to play if like she's going out with the girls or something.
Yeah,
you'll try to play a board game or something those days.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, if she's going to be out doing stuff, that's when I'll definitely try to take advantage of, like, I have some time to, like, definitely unrestricted time because she's going out doing something with girlfriends or whatever, so let's try to get Game of War Machine or play board game or something.
Yeah, just rocking the single life right now, so just, I have no real take on it.
All right. So let's get into the next question. This gentleman asked a few different questions. He did feel like, to me, he was trying to lead people down a specific path here, but I want to take it more as a generalized question for us. He said, his name's Giorgio, he said, if themes were originally instituted to provide a platform for game balance, it would indicate that the factions have overpowered interactions and synergies when left unrestricted. Is that actually the case? If that is the case, why... Is there at least one outlier to this rule in the Irregulars theme?
That's a big question.
It is a big question. And Elias, person did respond to me, said, I think this is more meant to be for design space to open up personally. I don't know. By letting models overlapping roles, but are differentiated by the themes they are allowed in. So we don't see a ton of overlapping models. I know the Crix themes, the big one is the Ironmongers just came out, made their way into a lot of themes.
Yeah, there are at least 3 of them.
The ones that overlap are like the Beasts and Jacks, and then there's usually like some support stuff that might overlap a little bit between themes.
Yeah, support's a big one. Like you know,
Beast Handlers
have very many themes without choir.
Yeah, choir, Beast Handlers, even like can't multiple Crix themes take like Machine Wraiths? For example, like random support solos or necrotechs, that kind of thing.
Forge Seer.
Forge Seer.
The yeah. 2 themes, Jaws and Wolves.
Yeah. Right. I don't.
And that's fine. And I get the overlap, and that's good. But I guess the question here is feels like he's trying to lead into the fact that he didn't seem to like themes, is how I got this. I'm opposite of that. Maybe you guys can, or maybe you have different opinions, because my case is themes are good. I understand it on a game balance into things, but for me it's also I'm not a huge story person, but I do like some of the story, so getting little tidbits of certain aspects of the story, especially when they go through CID and a new no quarter comes out, is really interesting to me. But the other aspect to it is is I like collecting the like things. So for me, I own all of Minions except for one model. I don't own a Rollick Morclaw because there's just no point in him in that army. But like for me, for Crix, I only own 3 of the 6 themes, and I can collect that subset of models. And I think for new players, it's a great situation. Because a new player can come in, let's say they're starting Menoth and they really like the look of some of the Exemplar models. Well, they just go and they pick up all those Exemplar models.
Right.
And now they can play 2 lists right within that theme.
Yeah, you think Skeleton Warrior dudes look cool? Okay, like just buy into Dark Host and you don't have to necessarily collect other stuff.
Right.
All the beans.
And if you don't like factions Satixis, too, like, by default, you end up with a second theme because most of them have a beast or a jack
right.
theme that goes with it. So, like, yeah, take Crix with Dark Host. I could buy into Dark Host, have some jacks, buy a few more jacks, and now I have Black Industries too.
Yeah. I don't think the premise, like, his question kind of says that maybe the premise for themes might have been some unbalanced interactions when themes don't exist. And that may have been true at the very, very beginning of Mark III, I guess. But I don't think that's the case.
Now that every model's encompassed, it's definitely a big
difference. Yeah, I just don't think that there's... I don't think they created themes because they said, like, oh, this is... like these couple models, like these Banes and these Satixis, or for example, have some crazy interaction that we don't necessarily love, so we're going to try to incentivize not taking that interaction by theme, like giving you free points and theme forces. I don't know if that was the impetus behind it. Like, there were some broken things, but that was mostly certain casters were overpowered at the beginning of Mark III. It wasn't like, oh, this interaction between a couple units that now don't share a theme force was way too strong or something. It was like things like Unatu or Mad Dogs or whatever, that they were like good on their own, not because of, oh, right, there's some crazy combo or interaction with other stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I think you would see more out of theme if there was a whole bunch of broken interactions. Just because you can still do it.
It's hard to make up for the 10 or 16 points. Like, originally when it was themes were talked about, the idea was hoping that 50% of the meta is going to be playing themes. Well, we definitely eclipsed that. Yeah, it's more like 99.
Yeah, yeah.
Percent of it. I mean, I guess, is there anyone here that dislikes themes? Or we pretty much...
Dislike? Yeah.
I dislike certain parts of themes, but on the whole, I think themes are okay.
What do you mean you dislike certain parts? You want to elaborate?
In some of my themes, I wish some of the interactions were off. Like, I wish Assault Commandos weren't in the Winter Guard theme, something like that.
Oh, sure. There's definitely a lot of that. I think same thing with Precursor Knights for Signar. I don't think
people just got love
the fact that they short. Got shoved into heavy metal.
Yeah. So, there's stuff like that. But on the whole, I think themes are fine.
Sure. And don't get me wrong. There are certain themes that will shake out. I think for the most part, I'd say 75% of the themes in the game are powerful and playable. Maybe even a little higher than that. But every faction has a theme that's probably a bit derpy. It doesn't work.
Doesn't work quite well. Yeah, there just might not be the quite releases well. Or something.
Well, that's just it. They could be filling those releases in down the line.
Yeah.
You know, the one that always sticks out to me is, and I know that we've talked about it quite often in our personal groups, is when I play Minions, I despise the pig theme. That thing is miserable. Like, giving a super crappy unit, which is the Commando's Ambush, is not worth it over just playing more Brigands. And then you get free things for taking units, but then the other ability goes to Beast that you're not really taking a whole lot of. So, meh. What's the point?
Yeah. I kind of look at Irregulars as an example of why... they're not necessarily worried about broken interactions as much, because that theme is like the definition of basically you can take literally anything except for like the ogre and bokor or something. It's like the one thing you can't. I mean, sure, like your jacks might be restricted. If you take a dwarf caster, you can only take dwarf jacks on them or something like that. But like mercs as a whole has the most crazy unique rules interactions among all their stuff, just because each unit or in each solo has so many different like abilities and stuff. So if they were truly worried about like not having a theme, having theme forces to restrict crazy interactions, then the creating a theme force like Irregulars, where basically anything goes in a faction where that's so diverse, would kind of undercut their goal if that was what they wanted to do.
Well, Irregulars is the only one we've seen like that.
Yeah, right? I don't think we'll see another one, though.
It's possible. I don't know.
I mean, they have a lot of room to do pretty much whatever they want in this game. Add new models, change things up, add a new theme.
I mean, it's definitely a lot easier to know that you're going to be studying these things within,
within like the context of a theme. Like, so you get a new release, and unless it's like a beast or jack, you're like, okay, well, it can go in this or this. Yeah. So they can balance it from a design point.
Yeah, and that's okay.
Because I think once you run into so many models, especially with them doing a new faction each year, it's going to get sort of crazy if they don't limit some kind of restriction.
Well, those are going to be naturally limited to an extent, unless they start building the new factions where there's crossover pieces, which I'm okay with.
I like crossover. I think that's cool.
I wish they would do more crossover, but I get that it's probably harder to balance that than anything else.
So you got to balance it between, because we saw with Locke, super crazy and Convergence when CID popped out, and kind of in Crucible Guard. Like, she seemed good in Crucible Guard, but when she got to Convergence, got bonkers.
0 to 100 really fast.
Yeah.
Right. I like the cross ones like that, though, just because, especially if you're lucky enough to play both factions, you're just like, all right, now I have to buy one model.
Right.
But also, it's a kind of a story thing. Like, I wish they would do more of the Gareth 4, or not Gareth, Gorshade 4. They would do more of the...
I mean, Old Witch was a good example. Old Witch 2 and 3.
Yeah, yep. That was a lot of fun.
Like, they're both very good in their own... Like, they share a lot of abilities, but the unique ability that she has is very, very good in each faction. Like, the focus ability is awesome in Kador, and bringing back D3 guys is awesome in Grimkin.
Like, I know the rule set isn't the best, but even Sturgis is cool.
Yeah, he was having versions. He was actually kind of one of the earlier ones.
But I think this is across the game, is that I'd love to see them build more things that cross units as well. Things like Jusica, where I buy one UA, but it can be the UA for multiple things.
Yeah.
It's not just for Blood Gorgers. It could be for Marauders. It could be for...
That could be interesting.
Kind of like how the rockets can be either put on infantry or...
It's a good example.
Yeah. Like, I was thinking they were going to do like a lot more specialized weapon attachments like that.
But I thought so too.
Yeah, if weapon attachments became a lot more...
Interchangeable?
Yeah, interchangeable between their units. Like Storm Gunners from Stormblades, for example. If you could like take Storm Guard and get Storm Gunners, or, I mean, not saying you would, but like it would fit like thematically.
Right.
It works. It's not, you know, crazy or anything.
Most factions have units that are similar to each other. Like pigs have commandos and brigands. They could have something that they share.
Yeah, you could have some pig guy that has a big grenade launcher or something that, you know, both units would want to bring. I guess makes...
I guess our problem here is that we're pro...
Yeah, we're pro-theme, but also... Theme
for the most part.
I don't know if I'm, like, pro-theme as much as I don't really have any negative feelings about it.
But. I was more negative about it when only there was only one per... One or two per faction. Like, that's when it felt unfair.
Yeah, because some people had some bonkers themes, and then some people had kind of the derp themes.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's not even just that. It was, well, if I only own this subset of models from that faction, then too bad. Like, you don't get that option where other people do. Now, at least, you have that option with every model you own. Within, like I said, it allows me to play Krix, and I could play it competitively and...
Yeah.
Own, like, the three themes that I own and stuff around it.
Yeah, it's nice for collectability.
And it kind of like the Trencher theme, it does look good on the table. Sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not, like, super into the fluff, but I like the look still of, like...
Oh, when things are, like, matching?
Yeah, like, when there's, like, Dark Host, for example, is a really, you know... good one to like cool look at the Iron Fang theme, like, yeah. Really cool to see all that stuff like together, and you know, it all looks uniform, and
there is some I heard Doug Seacat was saying that some new fluff was coming out pretty soon, so if there are any people who like the fluff, which I do, I'm gonna keep your eye out for it.
Yeah, they're going to continue to do books. It felt like they took a little bit of a break there, but that just could have been editorial-based. All right. You guys want to move on to the next question?
Sure.
I think we kind of beat that one down.
Yeah, it's a big question, though. So.
Well, I think this one kind of goes along with... This is also Giorgio, and it goes along with what we had already been covering here. Maybe we can expand if there's any other points, or we'll move on from it. But it's... He said, after that, what factors make themes so appealing to the community as a whole? I think we covered that for us. And then, is it the power game attitude present in the majority of competitive types of people? Always looking for a little extra edge, be it free points or non-points associated benefits granted by themes. Is this being told what to play in an attempt to somewhat lower the barrier entry? Or just certain thought process out of list building? Is it something else?
Well, I definitely feel the competitive part of it. I mean, getting two or three benefits and free models is, well, hard to pass up.
But at this point, 99% of the people are playing it, then they're getting 10 to 16 free points. So now I feel like everybody's getting that, and lists are becoming more well balanced with the new steamroller as well. Like, also the problem with this is something like Heavy Metal, we saw them getting four free solos because they didn't care about units at the time when it was the 2016-2017 steamroller.
Yeah,
now you have to care about units a little bit, which we've talked about in our prior podcast, but
yeah, you gotta pay attention to scenario now. Much harder. And with the new packet coming up, even this upcoming year, looks even more. You have to think about it.
What about the barrier to entry question? I know I kind of said that I think it's good for new players. What about you guys?
All right. Themes for me, when I came into this game, I was coming in from GW, and there was when I looked at the game, I was very into the look of the all undead army. And it's like, I wasn't really, but the thing is, I wasn't into mechanothralls. I wasn't into, like, the zombies made of all the different parts, but more of, like, the armored undead army, which I went right into Banes, of course. With themes, I feel it's a really easy entry point into the game for anyone who isn't competitively minded or not as competitively minded, and they want something that looks really cool on the table, which I feel is a really important game when you're looking for more players, like looking to introduce new players into your meta.
Yeah, that sounds about right. When I got into this game, I was a big Man of War fan. I'm all about the armor. So now that Demo Core have finally done something, I definitely feel the draw to play all themes.
Yeah. Well, I think the part of the issue here is there obviously is competitive people, and that's fine. But I think when we talk about starting in new players, most players don't start out being like, I'm going to go win this tournament. They're going to be like, oh, that shit looks cool. I'm going to play that.
Yeah.
And definitely looks cooler with themes. So. I don't know. But I don't think this guy likes themes.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Some people don't like themes. It's fine. I mean, it's the direction they want to take the game in, and I just understand that it's a lot easier for them for game balance to design things in themes.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, this is supposed to be a competitive game. You know, so there's supposed to be some kind of balance.
I mean,
it's supposed to be a fun game that has is competitive without having things like silly line of sight rules.
Well, and in if you didn't have themes, and with the amount of models in this game, like if they kept making new releases, the odds of something happening where it created a really bad interaction go up, and themes just reduce that possibility. So that's a good way to get people to stop playing your game, is to make the gameplay miserable, and themes might stop that to a certain extent.
Well, I think CID also helps with that.
CID is a big deal, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people do catch a lot of really crazy things. When models come in CID, people are pretty quick to catch, like, oh, wait, this is ridiculous. You have to change this.
We've watched now over a year of CID cycles. And I truthfully think the end models we get, PP probably already has, but they've changed them to test the waters. And then they get to the final model through the process, but it was probably where it was going to be anyways. But what I think that it's going to do is keep away from, like you said, those silly interactions from happening. And that's really what they're looking for us to catch and be like, oh, well, this can't happen that way.
Right.
But I still think they pretty much know where the model is going to be at the end before they even start.
Yeah, I think they definitely have an idea in their mind. And that's why when you usually see at the beginning of CID, some of the stuff is really like, wow, this is really powerful.
Right. Exactly. So, I don't know. But all right, so I think that's enough for themes. A local guy, Charles Phillips, said, how to begin a new faction, approaches to buying and collecting, how many casters list to focus on, should you go right to the competitive casters list or focus more on a general list, then incorporate the hallmark features of the new faction. Tough one.
I've started a lot of factions in my day.
Yeah. Yes, Paul is our local expert on this.
It's been every one of those responses for me when I've started a new faction. I've started new factions. I started Grimkin because I like the idea of a limited faction. I started Scorn because I wanted to play Immortals. So that was like, oh, I wanted to play this like specific thing, and I haven't deviated from it yet. But I started to play Signar because I wanted...
You want to play Haley too, Paul.
I wanted more interesting... At the time, I had only played Trolls, so I wanted more interesting options than just, like, punch stuff in the face with
You won't admit it, guys, that he started because of Haley too.
Telekinesis is really fun. It's a hell of a drug.
It is. I even played Scabrous last week.
But... So it's all of the above for me. Like, I've done the start a faction because it's good, start a faction because I want to play something specific, start a faction just because I was looking for something new, which was Grimkin. Mm-hmm. But like, it's been all the above. But I don't know. I've tended to focus on what's powerful. But in Grimkin, it was weird because everything is pretty good. Not broken, but good. And then Scorn, I've kind of been like, well, the Immortals list might not be the absolute best thing, but it's been what I wanted to play and was fun enough. Yeah. So,
I think this is a twofold question, though, because are you beginning a new faction as a player who's played the game for a while, or right. are you beginning a new faction as a person who is starting the game? Because if you're starting a game for the first time ever, then I think choosing a theme or two, especially one that has any overlap at all, maybe like Exemplars and Creator's Might in Menoth, for instance, is a good way for a player to do it. Because nowadays, since you can play most factions in, or most casters in a theme, you can do that, collect those models, get painting those if painting's interesting to you, and then you could switch your whole experience by just switching a caster.
Yeah. Well, I think for new players now too, it's easier than ever to just be like, well, what do you like the models for? Like, if you like the way something looks, it's going to be good in some variety. Like, you can build something for the almost all cases that makes something good, like interesting to play, and is relatively good on the table. So it's kind of just, if I was somebody brand new to the game was coming up and said, I don't know what faction to play, I would literally tell them, go look through all the model pictures and tell me what you think looks cool, because everything is good. If they said, well, what's good, well, the answer is like, well, every faction has multiple good things. So
in Minions at first is that as a biologist it was hard to pass up playing around with Gators in Mark II as a like just a fun thing. I didn't play them competitively, but I played him for fun.
Adam, you do demos and stuff at Collect. Like, what would you?
Well, I usually tell somebody? I walk people through the wall of models, and I go, you know, pick a couple that you like the aesthetics of, and then I say, all right, now that you've picked those, I'm going to tell you kind of their what they feel like game wise.
Like,
you
know, background.
Background a little bit. You know, this one's, like, usually pretty fast. This one's undead. This one's dark sand elves, you know, like, pain and stuff. And what do you like the feel of? Not so much the gameplay-wise. Because, like you said, everything is good in some form or fashion. You gotta pick something you'll like long-term.
You know? Yeah, I think if you don't like the models, it's not gonna incentivize you to want to paint or anything, or even play less games if you're like, I really don't like the way these look.
Well, I think this also depends on if somebody's ever played a miniature game too, because if they're coming from a GW like 40K or something, they at least have the premise of a miniature game and be like, okay, you like to play the Horde army, you like to play the big, I don't know, the big tanks and stuff.
Yeah.
And you can get an idea from them. Because if somebody doesn't like to play a Horde army, it'd be hard for me to be like, oh yeah, by the way, maybe you should play Krix or Trolls or something. It'd be like, maybe you should go towards something that likes big stompy robots a little bit better, or big monsters a little bit more. I don't know.
But it is a different question for somebody who's been playing the game for a little bit.
Yeah, there's, I think it's almost, or Bill had a twofold, I think it's actually more threefold. So you got your casual player and you got your competitive player.
Well, my problem is also I don't think competitive players always start out that way either.
Right.
Sometimes you'll get, you know, Johnny comes in just looking something to buy his time, and the next thing he knows, the guys he's hanging out are going to tournaments, and he's going to tournaments too, and then he goes, oh, well, I went 2-2, and then the next time he went 3-1, and all of a sudden he's trying to be a little bit more competitive or play a little bit better at a certain level. I mean, I also don't think that if you are starting a new faction, it's a bad thing to, if you like the look of the models, to go toward some lists that have been winning and stuff. And then you could even change them and make them your own over a period of time. Because there is something to be said about crowd sourcing, and that's really what that is. Something's doing well and winning. That's part of it. But also remember that if your faction isn't winning, that doesn't necessarily mean your faction's bad. The problem is when the lists get posted online and stuff for like the big tournaments, if you look at it, a lot of times it's the same people winning over and over and over again, no matter what faction they play. And at some point you have to remember that maybe it's not just a faction as much as it is a person for being particularly really good at a game or particularly have time to practice. And that doesn't mean anything. I mean, look at Paul for Immortals. I mean, we've all played against it now. It's a perfectly good list. It's got a few different builds, but we don't really have a Scorn player in the meta that is going and competing at every convention that's playing it. So,
and I could probably play like Risheth or something, and it might be better, but I don't want to play it. So.
It might be equal.
Well, there's something to be said for, like, I haven't played a ton of games with it, but if you've played something for a lot of games, then starting with something that's just jumping to something that's brand new is not always the,
you know. And then I think that with themes and with the depth that things are coming out in nowadays, there's a lot of undiscovered things that are good and people aren't playing. I mean, Pat and I have been working on Gorshade 2. Well, you don't exactly see Gorshade 2 running around the tournament scene very often.
I mean, I do, because you guys are here. But,
Adam, like, you're starting to play like Wolves of Winter now. Like, that list, like everyone was saying, it's like that theme was really underwhelming, but in like the current meta, it's starting to pick up speed.
Yeah,
like it turns out there's a lot of really good things in that theme right now.
And people are playing it in Old Witch 3, but Adam's played it in Vladimir 2.
Just got some Doom Reaper stuff.
Yeah, I still think Doom Reapers can come down a point. 13's a bit much.
I think if you're like an experienced player though, and like you've played against tons of different stuff, then it's like you said, it's a different question. To me, I would tell somebody who's more experienced, or I would want to go towards something that's different than what you're already playing to a certain extent.
Oh, that's it for
like
me.
That, like, don't, because certain factions have some similar features or play styles, and if you don't. I don't know if I would want to play like Scorn and Menoth, for example, and have that be my two factions.
Right, where you have to worry about your support every minute of the day.
Right, and casters tend to be, to a certain extent, like buff casters that, you know, stand in the back, buff their stuff, like that kind of thing. I don't know. That's just,
well, that's what my main two factions are. They're pretty opposite of one another. Like, yeah, I can play Black Industries that have some jacks and stuff, but otherwise I play Horde, like I play sets of Banes or sets of Undead Pirates, and then I go to Minions and I'm playing three or four models in a battle group, and I'm playing, you know, three lesser Warlocks at the same time, and I have maybe one or two units that are like two or three man units, and that's it.
Yeah. My two main factions are Grimkin and Signar, and those are pretty different in what they both have some tricks, which I like, but they also, one relies heavily on guns and the other one has almost none and has to break up and get up the board and get in melee. And so I would be a little underwhelmed if I started a new faction that had a similar, very similar playstyle once I put them on the board from one that I already owned. So, like, I would try to pick something that's crazy different. Like, if you play Kador, and then, like, okay, like, you want a new faction, go play Legion.
So you own five factions right now?
Currently, yeah. Like, yeah, you play Kador, go play Legion or Circle or something. And
definitely play, like, a little three.
Or the reverse. Like, or the reverse, so you've been playing Legion forever that's really fast and relies on kind of fragile stuff, like, okay, go play some brick lists with Kador that hit things really hard but are a little slower.
Right. Well, there's also, I've seen people do it, the instead of just speed or infantry and beast, play like, oh, this faction mainly melees, so then that's, they're like, oh, I could play a faction that actually has a gun.
Yep.
Like, I could see a Grimkin player doing that. Be like, oh, yeah. Oh, here's a melee faction, and then be like, oh, I just want to play with a gun. Can I play a faction that's got a, more than, like, one light war beast?
Right.
Hey, they have a whole unit of Holloman.
Sure. But no heavies with guns. So, I don't know. Yeah, there's definitely different ways to do it. And it's really a subjective question based on the person. And I think somebody like Adam, who gets people involved in the game more than maybe I get the chance to do, it's definitely something you have to gauge.
If that's Chuck's way of telling us that he's looking for a new faction, then maybe, Adam, you should... you can help him out on a Tuesday at Collectors or something.
I actually just played him last Tuesday.
Well, I thought he was looking at Mercs.
If he plays the Lily Elise theme, I can see that. That would be...
There might be some overlap there, too, which is nice. That's another nice thing, is sometimes you move to a faction that has a little bit of overlap.
Right.
It's easy to do then.
It's a little harder nowadays, because with themes, the Merc and Minion play has gone down a bit.
Yeah, if you played Signar in Mark II, you could probably play Mercs without, or at least some Merc lists without too much trouble.
Yeah. Yep. And Signar in Protectorate does Mercs a little bit easier because of the Laylee's theme now.
Yeah.
And Kingmaker?
Yes. Kingmaker. If you got a lot of Signar models, it's very easy.
If you play Trenchers. My problem with that is that a lot of those lists are similar because I'm playing the same type of model. So if I'm playing Gravediggers and Signar, do I really want to play Kingmakers and Mercs?
Yeah, because you can play with Damiana.
I guess. My point is that it goes against what Paul just said, and that it's the same... You're dealing with the same stuff, the same type of list, and infantry hordes, putting up a cloud wall, and I don't know. Yeah, there's definitely different ways to do it. Anything from you, Pat?
Well, I think you nailed all of it. I don't think there is anything I could add to that.
Alright. So let's look at the next question. This comes from Andrew Cutter. This is a guy that we used to play quite often. He said, Krix is consistently performing several points above 50% win rate in major events across the world. Is Krix a model of where we should expect PP to elevate struggling factions through releases, erratas, and CIDs, or are they simply an overpowered faction themes models that need to be toned down to approach external balance? What would be your preference in a broad stroke for improving overall balance if you were given the reins to design the future of the game?
Well, we have two Krix players.
Yeah. Sure. We also have two non-Krix players.
Exactly. So you guys can go first, and then Adam and I can tell you why you're wrong. So.
This is true. I can definitely tell you why you're wrong.
It says the other guy that plays like 30 infantry.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
I mean, part of the Krix win rate is certainly the players playing it to an extent, too. I think that goes back to what we said before, is that it does matter what players in the meta are playing these things. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. Krix has always been the odd boogeyman, but any game that I've played has always had a boogeyman of some sort.
There's going to be a boogeyman, like, no matter what, I think.
In them, yeah. Whether it's Krix. You know, for the first year, it wasn't Krix at all. It was Circle. Was the boogeyman between Wyrmwood and Unatu.
Kador was for a while as well, like with Mad Dogs and Winter Guard.
Right.
It was like, oh, what do I do about all these Winter Guard?
So,
Vlad Rockets.
Right.
Before, like, themes came out, like, Ossian was huge.
Well, then Storm Division came out as one of the first themes, and it was like, oh my god, all the Stormlances, I can't beat the Stormlances.
Right. And this comes to the fact that I think that Mark III was always meant to have all of these themes come out with it at the beginning. But maybe Mark III came out a little too early for that. And now we're finally seeing, between the steamroller packet and themes, we're finally seeing what they actually think Mark III should be with it. I think the steamroller packet was huge because now we're seeing, at least I'm seeing, a lot less lists. They're still around, but there's a lot less lists of, like, here's my 10 jacks. Can you deal with them? Because of the way the steamroller packet is, it's like, okay, we need to mix in some solos. We need to mix in some units with things, and we're starting to find more balanced lists in that regard. But
so what about Crix, though?
It's a tough one. I think in the sense of Crix is that Andrew's picking on Crix, but if you look at it, there's a couple factions that are having consistently high win rates right now. And where we'd like to say that all factions are equal, I think all factions are competitive, but there's definitely ones that do better, whether it's just players or factions. I'd say the other two factions that have a consistently high win rate whenever somebody does the stats at some of these large tournaments are Signar and Scorn as well, are two that are consistently high. But you look at things like minions. I've had a lot of great success with minions. To think that they're very, very good. I know that there's other predominant players around the world that think this. You know, you have Brett Fogle that just won Adepticon with it. But yet, if you look at minions, they have one of the lowest win rates at each one of these tournaments. And why is that? It's hard to say. Like, they just did an analysis of a large tournament, and minions had a 37 or 38% win rate. Well, they just went through CID for half their faction.
Yeah.
More than half if you count the summer. Last summer, they also had the Will Work for Food CID. So I just don't know if there is a great answer to it. Yeah.
Pay, you got anything?
Yeah, going with what Bill said, is like, I think Andrew's just kind of like picking on Crix right now, but if you see, like, on, like, through DGI, like, with, like, what has won locally, it's like, yes, Crix appears a few times in, like, the last few tournaments, but you're starting to see trolls pop up, Legion. Everything is starting to, I'd say, balance out, and everything is starting to get some spotlight in those 1-4 placings at tournaments. But I think a lot of it also has to do with, like, models that people already have. Like, I feel going from Mark II to Mark III, there was a lot of people that had a lot of Crix models. And I can see those, like, maybe people are taking a break from what they were playing before and they're trying out some Crix. Like, Bill, like, you play minions and Crix. Like you was. You were playing, like, what? Minions for, like,
19 and 24 months.
Yeah.
From Mark III.
Like, yeah, you're playing, like, minions for quite a while, but you're taking a break from it. You're playing Crix.
And it's Paul's fault. He got me into Gorshade.
But I feel like in the competitive scene, Crix just, everyone always says, like, Crix does, like, really well, but I think everything is doing really well, and it's just what happens to get into those top three spots. It's starting to be more randomized now.
I think that it's the opposite end that's a concern. I don't think that Trolls, Crix, Scorn, Signar, these types of factions need to be touched. I think the question is, yeah, even Grimkin for that matter. But I think it's actually, my concern isn't so much the factions that are having win rates of like 52-53%. My worry are the ones that aren't doing well at all, or nobody is gravitating to play after a large period of time. I'm not talking about within a month's time, because it takes a while to collect this stuff. It's not like a Magic deck that you can just go to the store and start buying and trading for stuff to get it right away. It takes a while. But my concern is what is on the bottom that needs to be pulled up more so. Mm. And if you use Crix or Signar as that benchmark, then that's fine if you want to, but I think there are factions that need to be pulled up a bit.
Adam's like ready to.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to see some of this with the Manowar once everything finally comes out and is built and played. We always have like a 2 month or so. Like
limbo time.
Yeah, when the final thing comes out to something, we start seeing it in large quantities. I think like with Brett Fogel winning Adepticon, me playing Maylock as well and stuff, that took a while to come about. Even though we knew about it and we started playing it, collecting it, it didn't really start coming about in tournaments for a month or two after the stuff was released. For it, I think the same thing's going to happen with Manowar. We're going to start seeing large quantities of Manowar and their use in the meta, and I think that is going to make Kador come up a bit.
Adam, just large quantities of Manowar.
I'm looking at this. Like,
I will have a hard time believing that Adam doesn't have at least one Manowar list and another. I do believe that Manowar is one of the themes, though. That yeah, you can play it as one list, but I don't think you can play it as two lists. Well, let me rephrase. You can by the rules. You shouldn't by what else is out there.
All right. What do you got for this question, Adam?
All right. Well, I've got a 5-point spreadsheet, and we're gonna go with point one.
He has a PowerPoint on why Crix is OP.
Yes.
came prepared. Oh, I had 2 points.
five. First point. You're wrong. Second point. No, I think you're right. Crix is going to start taking a little bit of a dive once start people figuring out, like the Wolves of Winter. People are figuring out what's good into them, what their deal is. They're not going to go into CAD for a while. And I think you're going to start seeing other factions, especially as they go through CID, start to take a tick up. Crix is still really dirty. All that debuffing that you can do just arbitrarily is hard for a lot of people to deal with. You can do the infantry spam real well, and when you play something like Zatixis, and the big way to deal with infantry spam is AoEs, and you can just say no, I don't think I'll take AoE damage this game.
To be fair, your faction is the one that has AoE spam.
I don't know what you're talking matters. About.
That matters. Most factions don't.
It doesn't matter, though.
Signar, I don't even think what AoE is.
What is an AoE?
Well, I mean, sprays, too. I mean, you just got high defense with, you know, it's... You're real good. I think the people are still worried about the Slayer spam, and they should be. But I think they are doing... just a little bit better than everyone else right now, but I think you'll start seeing it even out soon.
On the Slayer spam front, I'm surprised how few, like, it hasn't been every Crix pair lately that's won. Matthew McWaters at Muzon had it, but Chuck Collins wasn't playing it. At Seattle Open, they didn't have it. He had a Phixious 1 and Scar 3. Scar 3's interesting there. Italian Masters, I'm going down the DGI lists. Didn't have it. It's Scar 1 and Denegra, and actually had Denegra Ghost Fleet. Won the tournament. Over a month ago, another Scar 1, Denny 1, that actually seems more of a common pairing than Gatsby 3 does right now. So I think the next Gatsby 3 that won was the Southern Ontario Open, took second place. So, yeah.
You got more, Adam?
No, that's it for me. I'm sure you got something, though.
No, I honestly don't think Crix is overpowered. I think it's one. Are they the most represented faction in any event? Like maybe tied in any given event. Like it's not uncommon to go to an event and see like 20, like 1 in 5 people playing Crix.
I mean, if we want to talk about a real broken faction, let's talk about Convergence.
Yeah, we get one person in our area. It just happens to be, is Mike playing Convergence? No? Okay, don't have to care about them.
Let's also be honest, Convergence isn't broken as much as the TEP.
No, but I think Crix, it's like, and Signar to a certain extent too, like, you could see 40% of, or at least maybe a third, be those two factions in any given event. So just by
seeing, you never know. Like the last event that we played in, and Pat and I played in the finals, and you and I played in the semifinals together, there were three Legion players that were there that made up, you know, 20% of the.
Your event is hurting. The results of that event are hurting your argument, though.
Is it?
It was three of the top four were Crix. It was you scored, and then three Crix players.
So chosen poorly.
Did Peter?
Yes.
Go 3-1.
Yes. So that's, you know, that. But I think that to a certain extent it's just volume of players. Like if you have 20% of
an event being
Crix, like it's not uncommon for, just by the way the pairing process works, you might end up with a Crix in the top three. Like it's not going to be at all unusual to have one sure. Crix in a top three. When you have a 30 player event, you've got five Crix players or six Crix players and 30 people.
Yeah. Well, likewise there, the top three were Buffalo players, so maybe the problem was there, just Buffalo.
Well. Let's try to not start any civil wars between Rochester and Buffalo.
Or Canada and America.
Oh, man.
Andrew was a Rochester guy.
To be fair, the Canada players kind of knocked themselves out because they all played each other at some point in time.
Andrew was a Rochester guy, too, who asked the question. So
he was a Rochester guy. Now he goes and plays in New York City. Yeah.
But, and I think the other thing with Crix is that they have the most themes. Obviously, one you don't really see, but two. Being in Infernal Machines, but the other you can still play Ghostly, you don't see it as much, but I think it's just because there's such a diversity with all the themes and what they bring compared to some of the other factions, and that's partially why it's hard. And even within the same theme, like I think answering Lich with Nine Slayers and Denegra 2 in the same theme is really, really different. You know, it's radically different things. So
I think the nerf to Denny 1 is definitely a big thing that hurt the level of Crix in general.
I don't know. It seems like we all think Crix is like okay, I guess. Maybe Adam doesn't.
The higher end of okay.
To be fair, Adam also plays probably the one faction that fits two things. One, Crix might be its hardest matchup.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part of that is, remember when I said maybe the concern is more on the lower end? Cater's probably part of that.
That's true.
Know, and if you take the percentage results, it's definitely part of that, along with minions, rat.
Yeah.
And I forget the fourth.
Circle. It does take Cater to like play some very specific things, I think, to be able to have a shot with Crix.
You heard it here, folks. Cater needs to be buffed.
And that's
well, like I said, Mana War is definitely going to help. It's just they're going to have to get creative as to where their second list are, and this is why Adam's sitting here building Doom Reavers right now.
Yeah. Also, PP, if you're listening, the Doom Reavers need a resculpt.
You're just sad because they skip leg day.
They do.
So, all right. A semi-local guy to us, John Bacor, says, what sort of advice do you have for somebody who cannot get that many games in on a regular basis due to life plus a morbid meta, but wants to stay competitive? I always hear reps is king. What happens when that's not an option? Asking for a friend. Weird side smiley face thing. John is a really fun opponent. He has been playing Kator lately. He also played some Scorn for a while.
Circle.
He won it at Food Machine.
Yeah. He had he had Circle too.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that. In any case, what can he do? So I have a few opinions, but I want to see where you guys are at.
I actually have a couple opinions for this. So, a couple good things. Listening to podcasts is actually pretty good. Being able to theory machine is very helpful.
Helps keep you in the know. Yeah. Like, what's going on in, like, the world of War Machine.
Yeah, it keeps you in the know. You can listen. There's a lot of chats on Facebook and Discord. You can start your own group of chats through Messenger and stuff like that and really get it going. Also, playing by yourself, setting up your own table and playing out your at least deployment or first turn, doing a random throw of terrain and just seeing how you would deploy first turn. That really helps you with both clock and not messing yourself up when you go to a tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just practicing unpacking on that first turn and like the least amount of time possible.
Definitely.
Keeps you fresh on the game.
Even deploying like quickly and that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people on here also said that Vassal was an option, and it certainly is to get the ideas, synergies of games. It does take a lot of extra time, so if you're short on time too, that could be harder.
Yeah, I think that's tough for John, probably. Yeah. But
like, well, he does have a couple kids.
Right, so. Right. That one's probably not as easy. I think it's sticking with a couple lists and casters is a good idea.
Yeah. Nothing's going to beat reps, and I think John realizes that. The other thing is sticking with lists, but also reading through rules.
Yes.
Be it yours, but also not only yours, but also your maybe some of the more common lists that you might see in the meta, or common things. If you go and to a tournament and you're asking your opponent what the Bane Warrior does, you probably have a problem. So those sorts of things can help too, and that's where looking at those tournament lists on like Discount Games Inc. can really be helpful, because you can go on there and go, oh, I saw a couple of Dark Host lists that won. Maybe I should read what those models do. Even if it's different casters, just knowing the models sometimes and the threat ranges and such help. But also I find myself a lot of time writing down like my list pairings and kind of going through those DGI lists and deciding what I would play in each of those, and that helps me quite a bit as well when I do decide to go to a tournament. And John goes to a reasonable number of tournaments that we've been to lately, so
yeah, I would just tell him to stick with the couple of lists though. That's actually really helped me with Scorn so far, is I've stuck with two lists and with almost no variation.
Right.
With I've only played two Scorn casters, and I've not changed my list very much. And I'm only getting, like, I don't know, maybe 4 to 5 games a month outside of if we have a tournament or something.
Right. I think, definitely lists, but I would say for my own sanity when I do that, I don't know if you guys have ever noticed this, I usually have two lists that are my tournament pairing, and I try to play them. And then, unless somebody wants to play against something specific, I have a third list that I'm playing around with. Either maybe it will make it into my tournament pairing at some point, but also it's a way to keeping it fresh, especially when a lot of us are playing the same things over and over again in the basement. And
yeah,
sometimes it's nice just to be like, oh, well, I'm not playing Gorshe 2 or Dittnager 2 versus you tonight. I'm going to play blah, blah, blah.
Playing blah, blah, blah.
Do you?
That's the best.
Saying, the guys challenged me to play Scabrous against you the other day. You did get blah, blah, blah in that case. So, poor Scabrous failed the assassination.
Blah, 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 OP.
Blah, 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 OP. Well, and sometimes you get cool interactions. Like in Mark II, I played Kruger 2 in most every tournament at the end of Mark II for the last like year of Mark II. And then I just switched my second list depending on the meta. So I had a list that covered most things, and then where I couldn't cover things, I was like, oh, I'll do this here and that there. And then that also kept it fresh, because I was always trying something new to fill in that gap. So, like, for me, I played anywhere from Chromac to I think my favorite list was I had a Kaya 2 list that was really good against Bradagus, basically killing Bradagus off the table before he could do something stupid with the Blood Pack. When Blood Pack could actually boost their shots.
Good times.
Yeah, I at the same time, like that came down to knowing what your stuff did by heart and playing some similar lists and similar models. Like really knowing what your stuff does. That in those limited amount of games, you're not just like losing your small number of games because like, oh, I forgot my things did that, or you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you lose to like something that you didn't know your opponent can do, that's doesn't feel quite as bad in my experience as like, oh, I have this rule on this unit or beast that turns out would have been really, really helpful if I had remembered
right. it. Well, nothing's also worse than having to open your war room and look at your own rules.
Yeah, that is rough.
So, there's that. All right, so Wayne David has three topics that seem probably relatively fast. The first one is, do current themes inhibit combined arms army lists? Which is say, go across the table and say yes or no.
Yes, because of scenario.
No.
No. Depends on faction.
But no. There's. I actually think because of scenario and themes, we're going to see more combined arms lists and less, you know, Karchev with 10 Mad Dog situations.
It just depends on the faction. Some factions have less access to the combined arms stuff, but
I think it's becoming less and less, though.
It's
like,
true.
Like, look at Legion, who had less of it. Now they're like, oh, Primal Thayers, we're going to take combined.
That's true. It does depend on the theme. Like, the Immortals theme, for example, you're not going to get a heck of a lot of guns, so.
Sure. but even then, all your beasts do have at least some guns to it.
Yeah.
So. Second, faction focus on comparing and evaluating Cater Warjack's post-CID. Interesting. CID definitely changed Cato Warjax.
Yes. I have been giving this some thought, actually, since I saw it posted. I think Cato Warjax are in a really pretty good place right now, except for maybe Behemoth. He's just too expensive to take, in my opinion. When I can get two other heavies or two destroyers for three more points, which is double the boxes. It's very hard to want to play him. I think the Rager definitely is going to show up a lot more. You're going to see a lot more of the Berserker chassis, just because they are so cheap. And you can fit a good three jacks without going over the points too much. Also with Sorsha 3 getting flank, I think Berserkers are going to... You're going to see a lot of them, because it really ups their damage. And you can kind of throw them away.
That's fair. I mean, I think with the CID, all the points drops are really good. The Spriggan is now actually interesting with dual attack and the points drop and stuff. I'm not 100% sold that the Juggernaut needed to go up a point. I'm not 100% sure what the purpose of that was. I understand the Marauder going up one point, especially with the changes to Berserkers and things, which were really good. I do hope all the people that had 8 or 10 Mad Dogs now have or kept all of their Berserker bits. Because I think Berserkers are just better. Rangers are pretty good, too. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot there.
The Colossals are both sweet now, too.
Yep,
like, they're appropriately costed. Sweet. They're both pretty good.
I actually have to look at getting a Victor now.
Yeah. I also think people should play more Kodiaks as well. Yeah. They didn't change in CID, but they're awesome.
Yeah. I said the only thing that surprised me, though, is why did they pull the Jugger up and not up a point?
I do not know, and I was also asking that in CID.
I felt like they could have just stayed.
I don't know, maybe. I really like the Colossals. Colossals have their own problems in this scenario packet, but I think both Kator Colossals are both appropriately costed and very good.
Well, we're seeing this across the factions as they go through CID, that they're pulling the points down. Yeah. We're likely going to see it with Judicator.
It's not because of effectiveness. I think part of it is the scenario. They've recognized that they just don't function as well.
Well, it also makes me wonder that if they don't have plans of changing away from this this system of circles for units, squares for jacks, and then flags for solos situation. Right. I got a feeling they're not getting away from that.
No.
If they're willing to pull those down. But you're right, it's definitely a lot.
If they're actually willing to point cost models based on that system. Yeah. Right.
And I hope that we continue to see it. I'd love for the Kraken to come down just a couple points. As a former Circle player who hasn't picked it up really in Mark III except for a couple of games here and there, I would love to see the Storm Raptor come down and even get Mat 6. Even Woldrath. I sold my second one because of the Steamroller packet, and I just have one, but I wouldn't mind seeing him come down one or two points as well.
I would buy a Mammoth if it was cheaper. Yeah. I just think it's so cool looking.
It is really cool looking. No, I think the Hydra looks really cool too, and he's another one that could come down. But yeah. What is the Mammoth point cost?
38. They're both 38. Like they, yeah. They're another. It's basically, I feel confident in saying that as each faction goes through CID, you're just going to see Colossals go down.
Well, it's only beneficial to them, right? Because they want to sell those models.
They're cool centerpieces. It helps to sell their game too.
Right. So, and we saw with Battle Engines. Battle Engines across most of the factions are useful now. Like, there's very few factions that aren't using their Battle Engines.
In true.
Something. Caterer might be the only one, and even then, there's some people out there that really, really love the Gun Carriage.
And they're all the people that also really like the Man of War Chariots.
Chariots, yep.
Yep. Yeah, I haven't. As Adam and I keep scheming lists, I keep passing them over, but. Maybe I just haven't seen him on the table, and that'll change my mind.
Yeah, I don't see the Circle of Battle Engine very much.
Actually, it is almost a constant staple in every Kruger 2 list.
So, I haven't run the Kruger 2 in a while.
And it is glorious. And the reason why it's played is because it's in Bones and it's Fury Management.
And it makes him Magic Ability 8.
Yes. Oh, that's true, too. It does make him Magic Ability 8. Yeah, no, that thing is silly. But I think part of the problem there is we don't see Circle. Like, the only Circle that you see is, like, one local player, and that's it. Like, I'm either going to keep them or drop them after CID, so we'll see.
What's those? Do you have another question?
Yep, and then comparing Warjacks and Warbeasts with similar roles, range, support, heavies, cross factions, cheap melee, beat sticks, and War Machine and Hordes, which ones are the most effective, and why? Well, jeez, that I'm not even sure where to go with that question.
That's a really hard question.
Maybe this is something we can talk about another time. But
I think we could do like a good long topic on that one.
Yeah, I also hate the first sentence. Sorry, Wayne. I don't think it's fair to compare Warjacks or Warbeasts across factions. Like comparing them in faction, like let's say the Juggernaut and the Kodiak being both 13 points. That's a fair comparison because they're fighting for the same slots or so. Even comparing a Marauder to a Juggernaut and saying, okay, is it worth the two more points to pay for a Juggy there? Those are fair comparisons, but to say that, why are we comparing Krix and Caterjacks together?
It's really hard to do that.
It doesn't translate real well.
No.
As much as I would like to.
And it's not supposed to, because then you have to take an account of, well, okay, Signar is not doing infantry is better than Krix, so why do they have better shooty jacks than Krix? Well,
that's what they
do. Gotta make up something different, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Otherwise, you'd be playing a faction for aesthetics, and everything in the factions could be the same with different models. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, internal balances within each faction's selections that could probably result in reductions in points, but like I don't understand why a Titan Cannoneer is 17 points, for example.
Right.
But that's comparing it to a Titan Sentry or a Rhinodon, not
right. Like, those are fair comparisons.
Not like or an Angelius or something.
Or you can even do it and compare it. I know we did this the other night. Compare it to a Sentinel, which is another shooty.
Yeah, yeah. Like you look at those two. Why is this one 1 point more than the other? And it's right.
In any case, there's a lot there. We have one last question that was posted. And this kind of goes with our themes, but is actually very poignant, I think. Jacob von Loderbauer, I hope I said that right, Jacob. He said, when it comes to theme machine and list building, how important is it to max out the free cards? Do you think it's worth it to play down a free card or two in order to have access to more tech and to have larger battle group and troop-centric themes, more troops and a Jack-centric theme, etc.?
I think that depends on a case-by-case basis. Back when, like, when I got all my themes for Crix, I know I was constantly looking to, like, get the most out of my free options. But now, based on how, like, the meta's turning out, I don't really care if I have three free things. It's like, two is great, yeah, but I would rather have two free things and have a more optimized list than have all the things that give me three free things and not be as optimized as I could be, based on my options.
Fair.
Yeah, I try to stick between two to three. I don't go for the full four. I usually never go for the the one.
Most themes can't do four. There's a few, but not many. Some of the Jack themes can, or Beast themes, but the infantry ones can't because it'll be like 20, and you can only go up to 75 points, so... you can only get three free things by taking 60 points. But I do find myself more often now being okay with two free cards instead of three. Like, I'd like to have three where I can. But it just depends on what else I'm giving and taking. I think the inclusion of mercs and mercenaries to... Or, sorry, mercenaries and minions to factions gives you the ability and the thought process to only do two free themes where you might not have done it before, or two free cards where you might not have done it before.
I think the merc and minion options give you a good reason to as well. Like, a lot right. of the abilities are so needed or so unique that, you know, it's worth it. Like,
right.
Grimkin, I was playing a Grimkin list that had six free cards, kind of.
Yeah, well, that's rare.
That's really rare. But they also didn't have really that many merc or minion options.
But even then, sometimes you would only play in five just to... And not maxing it out so that mm-hmm. you could get more diversity.
Yeah.
Or get a death knell.
Well, death knell counts. Yeah, well, like, sometimes I would add a glimmer imp, and you'd sacrifice a free gremlin swarm, but you'd get this really useful solo to buff... You know, debuff defense and stuff. So, I don't think you need to max out, and I don't think you should try to max out just for the sake of maxing out on free stuff.
Right.
Especially in the themes where it's like take 30 points of something to get free card.
Yeah, like Black Industries, you have to take 30 points. You know, for every 30 points in Jax, you get a free light Jack that's 7 or less points. It's like, in order to do that, you have to have 90 points in Jax.
Yeah.
I would rather have just the two free Night Wretches and have more support options than I would have otherwise not available if I was taking all 90 points in Jax.
Yeah, unless you're playing, like, literally the Lich 3 with 9 Slayers, get your exactly 90 points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's not...
And then you have 9 extra points.
Because when you're playing, like, Denegra in that theme force, you get your two free cards, right? You take 60 points worth of Jacks.
Yeah.
And then you get two free things, and then play a bunch of other units and solos. And...
Yeah, it just depends. So, no, I think as things go on, we're finding less and less of that. Is really what
yeah, don't need to. So.
Yeah. So I hopefully, Jacob, that answers your question. I also think, by the way, the scenario has pushed the packet has pushed us away from that as well. If you catch our last podcast, we talked a lot about making sure you have enough of everything. We said two seems to be the magic number. It feels like you need at least two Warjacks, at least two solos if you can, and at least two units, and then fill in the rest from there. But nonetheless.
Yeah, I think in the beast themes, beast or jack themes, it's a lot harder now to max out the free stuff. And right. like the infantry kind of base themes, your battle group points kind of give you enough to where you can max out, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, you still have enough scenario presence with the jacks and beast you get to bring for free.
Right.
But, so.
All right. Well, that answers all of our questions from... the Facebook page. I think, guys, maybe... I don't know. Did we have fun with this one? It was kind of nice.
Yeah. It's nice to do questions.
Maybe every month or every other month or so, we'll put up a post and say, hey,
what's going on.
Yeah, what's going on? What were your guys' thoughts? It was nice to see some people from overseas, some people locally.
Yeah, it's awesome to see overseas, especially. Like, so. It's kind of cool to know that somebody's listening out there.
But, yeah, so did we want to do our list today or not bother? We can run through it real quick if we wanted to, since we came up with it.
I don't know, we should...
Maybe we only have to debate one.
Maybe we should, I don't know. It's up to you. Up to you guys.
Let's see, what are we looking at? 126.
We could run through it really quick.
All right.
We'll just have to debate the one.
Cause controversy.
Yes,
right at the end.
All right, so in the past we've talked about with the top some of the top casters. In this case, we wanted to, for every faction, hit the bottom of the barrel. What do we feel like the worst caster in each faction is? And we kind of chatted ahead of time, and I'll go through the list. If you guys want to stop me, we could talk about a few. There is one that we didn't decide. I actually wrote two down.
There's a couple where we had some like honorable mentions kind of thing, but
yeah. So I do not have them written in PP order, so I'm just going to say them in the order that they're written.
Freeballing.
Number one is Signar.
Sure.
That's and Connie B.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like Sturgis is, by virtue of having Arcane Shield and Snipe on the same card, makes you better. Makes him better.
And you have a feat that has some sort of scenario presence by pushing things away.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. There was, there definitely was some talk about making her better with her to give a unit Marwyn.
Sure.
Kinda like,
sure. And if
followers.
Yeah. You get to designate a unit. That'd be good.
We'll see. But that doesn't exist right now.
True enough.
Nope.
So Mercenaries is Kane 3.
That's because of the jokes.
Yeah, there was some argument of
battle group options.
Yeah.
Of Magnus 1 as well, but yes, Kane 3 because of the lack of Shooty Jax, which is funny because he's probably middle of the pack in Signar.
Yeah, and Connie B is middle of the pack in Mercs. It's kind of
right. She's still probably lower, but
she's
still better.
She actually has like playable stuff.
Yep. Minions, Midas. I think that was pretty much a consensus through everybody.
He needs some help
with nobody else really even close. I don't think.
Yeah, it's just the between having unit buffs and beast theme or beast feat just doesn't seem to work out quite well. Menoth, we talked about a few different things, but Fioras in general were on top. I think it's Fiora 2.
I think Fiora 2, yeah.
I don't know. Tell you the truth.
Fiora 2 and Fiora 3 are really what we're debating against. Fiora 1 seems okay.
I do like Fiora 3 over Fiora 2.
Yeah, I think just the survivability difference and...
Yeah, maybe.
She can do a little bit more work herself. I think puts her over the top. Kador, there were two brought up. I believe it's Butcher 2. Adam said Old Witch.
I'm actually going to go with Butcher 2 on this one.
I think it's also Butcher 2.
Seems...
His feat is too hard of a mechanic to actually use. It's confusing and it's difficult.
I definitely was thinking if he would be good in Wolves of Winter.
In theory, but his feat's still awkward now because they tried to get it away from the old one. The other one to that is Old Witch. I think as more infantry is played, she actually gets better. And we are starting to see an uptick in infantry, so that might make her... better than she was before. Crix.
Denny won.
They nerfed her to 26 jack points. We're screwed.
Whatever we're going to do.
No. But Pat and I, as Crix players, said Morty won. There was also the talk of Sturgis.
I can agree with Morty won after reading your card again.
Yeah. I think it's Morty won as well.
Sorry, folks. It's definitely Sturgis for me.
I like the feat too much of moving things closer to my banes.
And the fact that he's like, he does get like 12 attacks.
Yeah, and occultation's
right. Occultation and Parasite on a Parasite in a faction that has such cheap arc nodes.
Chain attack Dark Shroud, though.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, how about this? You guys play each of one of them against each other, and we'll see who was
the best. Dibs on Sturgis.
No dibs on Sturgis.
Sturgis versus Sturgis, let's do this.
Do you even own Sturgis?
Yes, I do.
Son of a bitch.
Is he assembled? No, he isn't.
I don't own either.
Aww.
Retribution, we had a consensus of Raven.
Yeah, not Gareth.
Not Gareth. Because even then, at least Gareth can do stuff.
He's got Sentry, which is good on crickets.
That and Gareth is just cool, and he's like ridiculous in Thunderdome.
He will kill you if mm-hmm. if he manages to that get Thunder to your meta, get though. To your caster. Yeah. You'll die.
Convergence was Aurora. That was consensus.
Yeah.
Yes. Trolls. We couldn't agree between Gristle and
Gristle one
and Jarl. Jarl.
Yeah.
I think it's still Jarl. Paul said Gristle won.
I don't think Gristle won's very good.
You guys never said anything.
I'm in the Gristle one count.
Jarl has a cloud wall and 3 sweet upkeeps, so.
Yeah, I'm with him. I think Jarl is marginally better. Right. Which is enough.
Fine. Gristle won. Circle, for me, it would be Morvana won.
That's.
Well, Kaya won.
Oof. I don't know. The Call of the Wild theme is really good for her. So there's something to be said about being able to bounce things back and over and over, but
I can't remember. Why don't we see Bradagus anymore?
No, Bradagus is good.
Bradagus you see plenty.
Bradagus is real good.
Yeah, he is on the upswing right now.
Is he?
Yeah, he is.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, people realize that Synergy's still a good spell.
Okay, no, because I was like, he's not one of the bad ones, but I can't remember like seeing him in the list
tonight. No, I think the three are like the three on the bottom are Morvana, Grail, and
I'm gonna go with
Grail. Yeah, Bradagus is bringing
Morvana, RFP Grail, on, and Kaya one maybe.
Yeah, probably.
And Kaya he's bringing one. RFP on guns and melee attacks with Bradagus, which is really good in the meta.
Yeah,
and Kaya was probably just a situation she was a battle box caster for so long that they couldn't do too much with her.
Maybe.
Legion, it was stated as Bethane.
This is pretty unanimous. Well, you said Krissa, but I think we're...
Yeah.
I think the theme just doesn't work.
Scorn, we talked about a couple, but I believe it's Hexy one. He just doesn't do things as well. His feet's awkward to use. 3-inch move is just not large enough. If it was a full advance move instead,
his feet's it would be a
lot that feet better. Will burn your clock like crazy, too. Yeah. Yeah. Like, talk about a 25-minute feet turn. Because you're playing him against stuff that's like infantry focus, so you could spend.
Well, that's the problem is that time. How many list pairs have 2 infantry focus lists? Are you just going to get wrecked with the other one?
Yeah, I just think he does. It seems like he does things that Risheth or Morgul 2 or those couple other casters can do better.
Yep. And then last but not least was Grimkin, and we pretty much unanimously said King of Nothing, and he still has some uses with his Cloud Wall, but
yeah, meh. He's
yeah. That debuff to this whole army is not great.
I just don't like that. Like, Sands of Fate is only good in the one theme force, and I don't think that theme force is good with him, and then it's useless in the other, you know.
Well, the other problem to this is what's next? Like, he is still probably useful.
He is. That's the thing, is like, none of their casters are bad. He's just the bottom.
But the next one to that is King of Nothing. Or, Wanderer to King of Nothing would be the next one.
I think Wanderer, yeah, I think Wanderer's pretty good.
Because nobody's going to put Old Witch, Heretic, Dreamer, or the Child up there. Like,
no, it's. And Wanderer's quite good, I think.
So. Yeah. So that is our lists of bottom casters. Rip us apart. Tell us what you think. Make sure you don't just say we're wrong. Actually put a reason why so people can discuss it. But we'd love to hear where you think things are. Maybe you love one of these casters and we just don't know why. So,
I'm pretty interested in finding out what you guys think.
Yeah, I'd love to hear people. Like, I think that's one thing that's exciting right now. Is that there's plenty of stuff that's undiscovered that we're still figuring out is good.
I would say half these casters on the list aren't, like, outright terrible either. It's just they're less good, definitely less good. Like, Bethane seems really bad. Hexorus 1, though, is not
I just look at
actually terrible.
That's my problem. Like, I want that.
Neither is King of Nothing. Like, King of Nothing, not actually terrible.
No.
Hexer is one, not extra terrible. Gristle and Jarl, not terrible. Like, they're definitely playable casters.
And it's possible that Morvada 1, if the Tharns come out in a specific manner, could be quite ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's just, we're talking about right this second.
Right.
So, Midas is still shit, sorry. All right, does anyone have anything else?
I think that's it for my end.
Yeah.
All right. So, thank you for listening to Signs Importance. You can find us on the Muse on Minis Network, or please like us on Facebook at Signs Importance WMH. If you like us, you can be part of the discussion about the bottom of the barrel casters, and see what other people think. Also, you can participate by asking us some questions, and we'll answer them. Yeah. Whether you like our answer or not, it's a different story. So, other than that,
thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, and good luck to everyone coming out to the qualifier at Millennium.
Take it easy, guys.
Peace.